Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new world. It's a new world order. This is Don't Forget to Flush. Now, while that sounds like an instruction, that's actually the name of the podcast.
I like it. It's great.
Very excited to be here with Mike. I'm such a huge fan. I can't even believe I'm doing this with you.
Thank you so much. I'm Mike Zapsik.
Namoski.
That's Namo.
Yeah. Welcome to Don't Forget to Flush. A very unique podcast, and I hope that you will continue to listen to this podcast because there's so much that we're going to be talking about. And so today, I think the best thing for us to do is to sort of make a case why you should abandon all other podcasts and think about putting this one.
Wow. You're giving them an ultimatum here. This is, listen, you can listen to no other podcast other than this. Don't Forget to Flush. Although I think that's a bit extreme. Although I don't know. I'm sitting here now. I'm thinking maybe we let them listen to a couple other podcasts, but put this at the top of their rotation.
Well, interestingly, I'm actually trying to target people who don't have loyalties to any podcast. I'm trying to build a movement. So I'm if you're out there and you already have some loyalties with any other podcast, stay where you are.
Turn them off. Turn this off right now, damn you.
Get ready.
If you're, fence sitting on, you know what? I really love Tell 'Em Steve Dave, but I'm not in love with them anymore. Or Harmontown has really been floating my boat, but Dan Harmon personally told me to go to hell. I get it. I understand.
Were there just names or the names of podcasts? Because I haven't heard of those.
Harmontown is the name of a podcast.
Oh, awesome.
Actually, they're both names of podcasts. Tell 'Em Steve Dave is it's Brian Johnson and Walt Flanagan.
Oh, far out.
Yeah, from Comic Book Men, of which you are a fan.
Yes.
Who also with Brian Q. Quinn from Impractical Jokers.
Wow, these are all heavy hitters. Can I have a do-over?
I need to start this podcast. You're good. No, again. You're great.
So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Don't Forget to Flush.
No, don't.
This podcast is one of the many podcasts that I've
don't do that.
To you.
Not even close. No, get out there and you know what? It's like when they tell you if you're going to prison, go up to the biggest guy and punch him in the face.
And then make sure you go into surgery so that you can hide from him for the entire time you're in jail.
Well, exactly. You're going to be in solitary after you get out of intensive care. But my thinking was always go for the second biggest guy.
Ah.
Because you get the attention of the biggest guy. But, at least you've got more of a chance with the second biggest guy.
You are not a motivational speaker. Go for number two, ladies and gentlemen. Be the number two.
Well, that's why, don't forget to flush. This is, go for number two. There. See, I'm tying it into your podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. So, yes, guys, we want to be your number two. Maybe not your number one, but at least we'll be up there in your top 10. Welcome.
Well, guess what? You know what? If we're striving for number two, always go to be the second because you're never going to be perfect. And you're going to be people's number one. They're like, Don't forget to flush. That's my number one.
That is very true. That way you can manage expectations. That is very, very cool.
Manage your own. Don't manage anybody else's because I think it's tough enough to manage your own expectations.
You know, what you just said actually brings me to the reason why this podcast exists, right? The fact that we can't truly manage other people's expectations or make people do what they don't want to do or make people become who they don't want to do or be. But I feel like having a podcast where we can actually allow people understand or listen or hear about experiences that are not theirs will sort of open their mind to the idea or to the possibility of being something or someone else. Or like an upgrade, not necessarily someone else, but like an upgrade. So Don't Forget to Flush. It's really it's a tribute to the idea that every single one of us carry out that instruction one way, shape, or form every single day. Well, if you don't do it every day, that's a whole different problem we can't solve. But the point is that at one point, we all do it by reflex. We know that's what we're supposed to do. And so we're wondering, how about every other thing we do in our life? You know, how do we just take a magnifying glass and look at some of the other things that are going on around us and figure out if maybe that's what we need to do?
What about your life experience in this particular situation makes it unique?
Ah, so very good question. So the point of the podcast will be for us to celebrate certain things through the lens of an African experience, right?
Okay.
Which is my heritage. My name is Namo. I'm Nigerian. Shout out to all my Nigerian brothers and sisters and relatives. And Chukwudi, the money you owe me, please, if you're listening to this, that money still counts.
I was going to say, listen, I've been contacted by my many Nigerian princes.
Wow.
And
we went there immediately.
Immediately. Of course. It's I mean, you teed it right up for me.
I'm like here trying to like get into the middle and you're already talking about a cousin.
Of course. Your cousins who I swear to God owe me about $83,000. So
wow.
I know. They promised it to me.
No, you know, I know what happened. I mean, there must be some schools built in your honor.
Yeah, bad.
That's where the money went. I always tell people the Nigerian princes are just trying to make life better.
Maybe not
their own life better.
Well, maybe not my life, but exactly. They're making their own lives better. They're trying to one Nigerian prince at a time, folks. That's what we're doing.
Well, you saw the video about the guy, the news about the guy turned out to be some young man or old man in Florida. The Nigerian prince who was running, you know, and I'm like, who knew that the guy was a white American?
Yeah, I know. That's a line of succession right there. Some retiree in Florida. Holy crap.
Hey. So we hoped that that was going to change the whole news about the Nigerian prince. But for some reason, he went to jail and somebody received another email and they were like, nope, we caught the wrong guy. Dang it. They're still out there. But anyways, those group of people, of course, everybody's in a hustle. But think about it this way. So I'm Nigerian. I'm out here and in the U.S. And one of the serious experiences that I've had is in the fact that, you know, wherever I travel to perform, I'm a stand-up comic.
Mm-hmm.
I also host quite a number of events. And so when I go out to perform, the amazing thing is people tend to like me when they finally meet me, as opposed to when they don't know anything about us or me, as the case may be in this context, and they have all these formed impressions. Like there's this unique thing that happens where people seem to be different when they finally interact with someone than when they don't have those experiences.
Well, of course. Everybody, you know, we live in a world of sound bites. We also live in a world of you see the headline, you don't read the story. So, that's why clickbait is so devious and it'll kick you in the butt.
And that's the part that I worry about, that there are now degrees of impressions, right? Like, excuse me, people say, I've never met an Eskimo, but nobody would hate on an Eskimo. But you haven't truly met a Nigerian, but you have a very strong negative opinion of that person.
Not necessarily. I believed in that Nigerian prince's mission to, you know, take
you
money
are different.
From me.
I mean, like $85,000 later, you are a believer.
I have learned that, you know, there are. You just told me there are probably schools in my name. It's great. I love it.
That is how we have to make you sleep well at night.
Exactly.
$85,000, that's a lot of money.
Foolishly, yes. It's, you know, and I think that I've proven that I am not trustworthy enough to control $85,000 if I'm giving it to every Nigerian prince who contacts me.
I just hope that your family members are not hearing this and wondering to themselves, he has all that money?
No, my children are now in debt, so I passed it on to them. It's good. But there are a couple things. You're absolutely right. When you hear the, you know, Nigerian, it's like, oh, my God, those princes. Yeah,
that's the first thing that comes to mind. But nobody talks about all the other Nigerians. And one amazing one that I like to tell most Americans is, you know, the doctor who found out about, you know, Concussion, you know, the movie.
Yes.
He's Nigerian, you know. And I'm like, that that's NFL. You know, it's a sport that everybody loves out here, even though I've never really figured out why it's called football, considering you only kick it once the entire game.
I know. It was the 1800s. We had nothing else to say.
Thank you. Thank you. Finally, somebody owns up to the idea that it should be called and.
Oh, are you kidding? I'm like, yeah, why not call it pig ball or
NTL, you know, National Throwing League, you know, that kind.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. But
so in that context, you know, they do know quite a lot of other Nigerians, but there's this whole sentiment about if you're doing good, then you're American. If you are the guy who's taking $85,000, then you're that guy in Africa.
I don't think that many people are believing that it's a true Nigerian prince. I think that most people think that, yeah, it is. It's some dude down in Florida. Or it's some guy out in Arkansas who's got like a bank of, Cray computers and they're spamming everybody. So,
okay. So that means you've come into the reason for the podcast. Don't forget to flush.
Exactly.
We're going to flush all that idea out and we're going to now begin to focus on this global phenomenon of 55 countries, was it 54? 55 countries of Africa and all the different folks from all those different countries in Africa living right here in the United States and their respective interaction with other folks who are black, white, Asian, any other ethnicity and that melting pot and that experience. And so the podcast is sort of a dedication to, you know, things that we know about the culture in Africa and what we can really share here and, you know, our own views of, you know, things that are going on here. Like, for instance, if you don't mind my asking.
Sure.
I still haven't figured out why people walk their dogs.
Why they walk their dogs?
Yes. I mean, like, I don't get it. You do know it's a dog.
I do.
It's possible that that dog can learn to walk itself.
True.
Because it has four legs.
Absolutely. I used to take my dog to a dog park. They have parks specifically for dogs to interact and socialize.
My God.
Isn't that great?
I don't know the things that you guys do. Let me learn more. So tell me more about this dog celebrated experience called the dog park.
The dog park. It's over by Monmouth Racetrack.
Okay.
And personally speaking, I think that they should have like grabbed the dogs and raced them. You know, okay. Grab all the dogs that come in on like a daily basis. And, yeah. Hey, let's see if we can race these guys. You know, put the. The little rabbit, rail.
Somebody's a gambler. Okay.
Yeah. No. I don't gamble at all. I just think it'd be, you know,
it'd be way more fun.
It lends itself because it's right across the street from Monmouth Racetrack. That we could, why not do it? You know, and then you have like little betting things. And I'm not by nature a gambler. I just don't. It's not something that. I find thrilling or anything.
The things we find out about you, I could have sworn that you were one.
No, not a gambler. Although I was thinking if, you know, someone took me up on that idea, I was going to, you know, profit off of it. So.
But you know, it's amazing that you talk about what the dogs could be doing at the dog park. But the reason why I'm saying about the walking of the dog, which the dog park sounds like a good idea right now, which everybody should be doing instead of walking the dog in front of my house and then not picking up the poop. But that's a whole different
thing. I always pick up the dog poop.
But the interesting thing about the walking of the dog is that it seems to be that we're picking up things from how we treat dogs to how we should treat children or kids or human beings.
Like, think for we should instance, take our kids for a walk?
Well, that's what it seems like now. There's these leashes that they put on the kids, right? Which is, yes. It's from the dog. It wasn't like the kids were like, oh, please give me a leash because I really need one. It was like, well, this is what everybody does to their dog that they don't really have a good relationship with. They feed the dog, dress the dog, have the dog, cuddle the dog, and that's it. So let's do the same thing with our kids.
Well, I don't dress my dogs. I actually... It's interesting you say that because on my way here, I dropped both of my – I have two rescue dogs, one from a high kill state. She's a Tennessee dog, and she's part lab and part Australian cattle dog. Beautiful dog. She was just absolutely gorgeous, but she's 10 years old.
I'm trying to Google as quickly as you said.
Okay.
It's okay.
Tennessee, she was grabbed as a puppy. There was a litter that was about to be euthanized because they kill down there like quickly. So group went down, grabbed it, brought her back up, and she's been ours ever since. That was 10 years ago. So she's getting up there in age, and she's about 75-pound dog. And, you know.
Now I feel bad because I'm like, why did I even bring this up?
No, no. You're telling me
a sob story, and then next.
There's no sob story. I mean, we rescued her. She rescued
us. It is a sob story. We're about to, like, she was rescued.
No, you want to hear a sob story. Her little sister was.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Piper. Actually, Ming Chen has one of my dog's litter. She was pregnant. She was part of a. It was a dog hoarding situation. You know how people are hoarders?
Wow.
And it's mostly in America that people are hoarders. They get that collector mentality. Then they get the obsessive compulsive mentality, pardon me, where they need everything.
Mm.
They can't throw anything out. And I've met a lot of people like that. There are people, I can't throw that out. I might need that someday.
Wow. That's quite a lot of us. That's quite a lot of us. It's a
typewriter ribbon, for God's sakes. Yeah. You're not going to need that.
Yeah, I just think most Africans hoard simply because they're looking to sell it later. But
okay. Yeah. Well, some people in America think that way, but not too many people do that.
I see you.
Yeah, it's better to, hey, it's better
how
to
did,
have
how
it.
Did we get here from Don't Forget to Flux? Let me see.
Because you're trying to figure out from an African's experience in America.
Exactly.
So, but you asked that question.
Yeah. So I lost my thought there. So walking off the dog, leading to us believing that we need to do things that we've learned from raising dogs or cats or any of the other animals. And that is how we want people to be. It's very subliminal. It's very subconscious. You know, it's like the more I look around, the more I see how that people have refused to talk to themselves to learn from human interaction like we used to do. And now we're replacing it with all other forms of interactions that we have.
So of course, Twitter.
Exactly. So if I love texting, then I would expect the person speaking to me to speak in the same manner I would read a text.
Okay.
You know, if I walk my dogs in the morning and that's a routine for me, then, you know, if I have to deal with kids, I just expect them to be, you know, in that same control and controlled environment. And, you know, so those kinds of similarities is what we hope to maybe share some of ours. You know, it's not just us coming over here and saying, oh, why do they walk dogs? All the dogs back home, they're in cages at night and they roam around to scare people away. How do we, you know, and those comparisons. But how about our own unique stories, right? Our own unique stories of not being able to go to school because there are few of them, there are no chairs, there are tons of us trying to go to the same school, and if you are not rich, you don't have access to it, so you end up doing crazy things like reading while the teacher is in the class because you can't be in the class, so you borrow notes or you buy notes and all the other madness associated with education. That's the way we grew up.
Right.
So when you now come to the United States and you have a library and you have all this access to education and people are like, oh, these Nigerians are very smart and very brilliant. But that's really because our own experience informed the idea that we need to apply ourselves three times as much.
Yeah. That's
our own quirkiness or our own story behind one element.
That's
right?
Actually very cool. That's dynamic. That's the American ideal of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. This is like you didn't have the opportunities, therefore, and which are abundant over here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the passion to come out here, right? So we hope through this podcast to be able to celebrate, show, share, try to tie those connections for people. So like my earlier point, where people would only know something about a particular culture, a particular group, from what has been the myth or what has been mentioned.
Or the negative stereotype.
Stereotypes, right?
Gotcha.
Yeah, you know, so we hope to tie connections. And some of the connections will be weird connections. Like, for instance, the Nigerian prince story, right? How many people know that the reason why some of the stories seem believable at the bottom of it is the idea that everybody knows about the corruption that exists. So if you received an email and somebody said, oh, I have $25 million sitting in a bank account that has been shared out, nobody asks the question and says, hey, how did you get $25 million? You know, because it's not the norm here, but over there there's corruption. So that's the tie-in to why that can be used against somebody who's not used to it, right?
Gotcha, sure.
So we hope to share those kinds of connections. They could be good connections. They could be bad connections. We could answer questions about why do Africans eat food that, you know, really thick and rich and the smell is heavy and, you know, the aroma is, you know, engulfing. And we'll sort of tell the connection to the kind of fruits and vegetables and things that we have in that part of the world, you know. And at the same way, we want to talk about connections of, you know, how we treat each other, how we talk to each other, how we engage with each other, and maybe inform someone else about why that's the tie-in, you know, if you do have an African friend or you meet someone or something like that. And at the same time, African-Americans as well. So,
gotcha. You know what I've always wondered? You like shrimp?
Shrimp.
Shrimp.
Shrimp. Okay, bad memories. But
go ahead. I'm sorry. But do you eat it or do you?
Oh, yes, I love the Thai shrimp for some reason, because I love Thai food and because it's close to jollof. See that tie-in? Have you heard about jollof rice?
No.
Oh, my God. We are powered by the thing called jollof, Mike. I have to introduce you to the world of jollof.
Jollof rice? Okay.
Jollof rice. That is like, it should be on our national flag, but somehow we didn't make it in. I don't know why, but that's how important it is. So, yeah, shrimp. Shrimp is good. We eat shrimp.
Great. Do you leave the tails on?
I usually try not to.
I don't leave tails on in anything on shrimp, but when I used to cook professionally,
mm-hmm.
And we would always leave the tail on. And I could never figure out why. Not because it's easier to, you know, cook with the tail on. It's if you're eating a shrimp cocktail, it's annoying because you have to go down and rip off the bottom.
Yeah.
To get and you're missing out on meat.
Hmm.
And it's easier to strip the entire tail off, you know, when you're peeling it. And it's not that it shrinks up so much when it cooks. It's just one of those things that's like, oh, crap.
Wow.
Why do we do this?
This is very intense.
I don't think it's intense. I just never understood why people do that.
No, I just think it's intense because I haven't thought about the shrimp that critically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, huh.
But you enjoy Thai shrimp?
Hey. You have a point. I'm like, I have to ask questions about that now.
Huh. Now, are you kidding? This is
like all this depth for shrimp.
Yeah, I know. Now you got to question everything.
I know. Like, wow, why do we scale the fish?
I know why we scale the fish. No one wants to eat those things. And have you ever cooked scales?
You're they talking to the guy stink. That cannot even cook for his own dear life. I've poisoned myself twice.
Wow.
I have not made it past boiling egg. And, you know, right now I'm just, you know, I'm very close to being able to pull off, you know, a really good baked chicken.
Okay, boiling bag rice. Gotcha. Good deal.
So I'm walking. So trust me, anything that you're mentioning about food and how it's prepared, to me, it's just fascinating. It's very intense. I always feel like the people who know how to cook, you know, the reason why I appreciate them so much is because I feel like they've mastered something that some of us are still trying to, you know, scratch the surface. I feel like they're the maestro of the culinary experience, you know, and it could be anything, but all I say is that I'm good for the eating.
Okay.
And nobody can clean a kitchen like
that. And it's awesome that you say that because it's so not true. These people are not the maestros of life. These people are, they're the outlaws of life. They're the people who, most people in the restaurant industry, and I swear to you folks, by all means, reach out to me on Twitter or anywhere you want to and call me a liar, a bull crapper, whatever you want to call me. But they are the people who cannot commit to a serious life of crime. I was. It's you couldn't commit to being like either, you know, a hitman or a bagman for the mob.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you could do the petty bullcrap stuff. So, yeah, that's, you know, the petty thievery. That was us.
Well, I guess I've always looked at folks who can cook, people in the restaurant industry with such admiration, you know.
And you shouldn't. I'm telling you.
There's just so much, you know, talk about doing something under pressure. That's the way I think about a meal because, contrary, you know, there's a science behind it that is not formalized. You know, it's like, you know, you have to boil this at this temperature, at this time, with this amount. And if you don't, it tastes a bit different. And you have to be able to replicate it so many times and be good at it. And, you know, I'm like, I'm just the guy at the other end saying, hey, don't forget to flush because that's where it all ends up. Because,
yeah, that's where your food's going to end up.
Exactly. You know, so I'm like, I'm good for the eating.
The science I can get behind, the science I know about, because one of the things when I went to culinary school, they did have food labs, food laboratories, where you find out why things happen.
I'm still blown away by the fact that, you know, comic book men, and here you are talking about culinary, but please go.
Oh my God, we'll talk comics too.
Yeah.
But for me, it was like a rogue lifestyle. Mm. It was my father wanted me to be, you know, growing up, he wanted me to be a diplomat. He wanted me to go. He said, go to the army, go into the diplomatic corps. Hmm. I think that he's like, there's no way that you'll be an effective lawyer because you don't like to lose. He's like, oh my God, you will get into fist fights afterwards. So being a diplomat would be your strong suit because you can talk your way out of almost any situation, which was very true for me. Growing up, I got into very few fights because I was always able to talk my way out of them.
Mm.
I never got into any serious trouble with the law because I was able to talk my way out of it.
Wow.
It happened to me in cooking many times where I would talk myself out of trouble. It was.
What is that? Like if the food was bad, you'd be like, let me explain to you.
No,
this is a unique experience.
It was never about the food. It was about the shenanigans that go along with being a cook.
Oh, man.
I could tell you stories.
Nothing about what happens behind those two doors.
The two
peep through glasses. And I keep wondering to myself, after I saw the cartoon Ratatouille, I was like, this must be what it feels like. Maybe some animal is the one preparing everything at the back.
There are a bunch of animals preparing your food. That's for damn sure. Now, are they rats or cats or bats?
That's a whole different thing.
They're mostly human animals, but yes.
So that's why when you say shenanigans, I'm like, wow, what goes on really behind? Because even on the TV shows, they make it look like, oh, it's all high pressure, high stress. It is, actually. And that's all it is. But I always feel like, somebody back there must be like smoking a cigarette and trying to make a food.
Oh, yeah. You've got people like that, like the lunch lady Doris.
Chewing tobacco and a piece of it falls into the pizza.
Now, you can't smoke in restaurants anymore, so that's not allowed. But I've not been in the restaurant business for, let me see, it's been almost 19 years. So, I mean, I can't speak with any degree of authority nowadays, but if you ever read a book by Anthony Bourdain, the late great Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, yeah.
Who did, what was it?
Parts Unknown.
Parts Unknown. It's called Kitchen Confidential.
Okay.
And that, to me, was an expression of that a lot of his life – It did cross over with mine. There were a lot of similarities in his story and mine.
Mm-hmm.
If you read his story, read this book. Kitchen Confidential. They actually made a TV show out of it.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. It was on Fox and it had a phenomenal cast. It had Bradley Cooper.
Oh, wow.
As Anthony Bourdain.
Now I'm interested.
Who else was in it? It was Bradley Cooper, Nicholas Brennan from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
He was in it. John Cho, who plays Sulu in the Star Trek. And he was also Harold and Kumar. He was in it. John Larroquette guest starred. There were a bunch of people. Frank Langella.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good. I'm going to check that out.
Great cast. You should. It's but amazing that they had adapted a lot of this stuff from the book into the TV show. It only aired one season. I don't even think it made it all the way through. It was brilliant, in my opinion. But, you know, critical success and I'm not critical success. It was a critical, it was a commercial failure, critical success. People were like, yay, this is great.
But
there's stuff you don't want to know.
So he did talk about the things that go on behind the scenes?
Absolutely. Oh my God. About the debauchery. There's lot of debauchery in the restaurant business.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is like one of the mysterious places that, you know, it's like I know nothing about. Apart from you right now, I really don't think I know a chef. Like for real. Like somebody that I know, okay. You know, I know folks who cook. I know folks who work in the restaurant business. Oh, I do know a chef, but she's on her own. You know, she's shout out to Talbert, TLBRT. Shout out to her.
Talbert?
Talbert Hospitality.
Nice.
She's based out in Maryland. So she has all this private chef things.
Oh, she does private catering.
Yeah, private catering. And,
nice.
And she has like this very unique events in different cities where, you know, you get like a mystery invite, you sign up, you come through, you get to eat with people you've never met. And, you know, it's like a 4-course meal. And, you know, so she travels around to do that.
That's
so
awesome.
She's like, yeah. So in that context, I'll be like, she's the chef that I know. But apart from that, like, I've always been like, you know, chefs are like celebrity. Like, no other industry has language coined for one person, like compliments to the chef. Like that phrase, it should be trademarked and owned by the community of chefs. Because I'm like, how did you get there to own an expression just by yourself? Where people be like, compliments to the chef. Some people even go into Popeyes and they say compliments to the chef because it's like that.
Well, it's Popeyes. It's awesome. Popeyes.
Yeah, be like, you know, but that's what I'm trying to say, that this group, I feel like they're up there, you know. I don't know how to cook, and I just think that they're like maestros, and, you know, they don't know people like me. And, you know, if you're a chef out there, please give me a shout out on my Namo Worldwide on Instagram, and please let me know that I can connect with you if you're a chef, just so that I can have more chefs in my life.
Cool. And may I just say one thing? Consider this. I went to culinary school back in 89 to 91. And I went to the Culinary Institute of America up in Hyde Park, New York.
Nice.
Shout out to the boys up there and girls up there.
Nice.
When I was going to school, it was a 1 to 15? 1 to 15 ratio of men and women students. I think it was 1 to 15.
That is terrible already.
That is not terribly, that's not a great ratio. Or was it 1 to 6? Maybe 1 to 6.
Yeah, the variance is quite high, but okay.
Yeah, one female to 6 males. And it was very male dominated, very
sexist.
That's
amazing, right? I mean, like, how is it that the one thing that this, so I'm African, right? I'm Nigerian.
Okay.
So when you think about the kitchen and cooking, all we talk about is that this is something that the women do. This is something that the women own. And here you are talking about culinary school, and you're like, it's heavily dominated by men.
It is.
Like, and that is, it's like mind blowing.
But it's kind of freaky when you think about, you know, that the ideal American home back in the 1950s, the woman stayed home and you know, in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Woman in the kitchen. And that's, but then, you know, flip it, go out professionally, it's male dominated.
It's amazing.
And to me, it was, and it was, I'm a man of my time. It was of its time. It was very sexist. We didn't mean it to be, but that's just the way it was.
That's what it was, yeah.
It's the way it was. And I mean, there's nothing to me more impressive than, you know, a kick-ass line cook who happens to have breasts. And I'm not talking about, you know, some of the fatter guys that I worked with. I'm talking about, you know, just like a lady who could hold her own online.
Yeah, but that's the thing. All the meals that I've enjoyed have been cooked by women, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always imagine to myself, I walk into a restaurant and at the back of my head somewhere is the impression that this meal was made by a woman. Like that's my
You would hold. Yes.
Yeah, that's what it is. But hearing you talk about how sexist something like this I can't even begin to imagine, you know, like how could it have even gotten there?
You know, yeah, it's a little weird. And another thing for you to consider is that back in when I was going to school, there were, let me see, the celebrities, and I use those air quotes, celebrity chefs were Paul Prudhomme.
Mm.
I mean, we had Paul Bocuse, who, you know, father of Nouvelle Cuisine. Julia Child.
Okay.
Graham Kerr. These were like our celebrity chefs. These were the guys. We were about three years away from Emeril Lagasse, you know, being like, hey, I'm here. Or Wolfgang Puck.
Mm.
These were guys that we knew of, but they were, you know, just on their way up to becoming like celebrity chefs. Now we have Gordon Ramsay. You've got Anthony Bourdain. Yeah. God rest his soul. You got a lot of people out there who, you know, are celebrity chefs.
Yeah,
Guy Fieri, for God's sakes, people are like, yeah he's a celebrity chef. You know? And to me, he would have been one of those guys who. I don't know.
But there must be a rationale, right? There must be something that they're saying is the reason why it seems to be male-dominated.
True. But then you've got your Lydia Bastianovich.
Okay.
Bastiana, whatever. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there was a Lydia.
There's Giada.
In Vegas, where she was at the Bogata. I think. Was it the Bogata? I can't remember. But there's a famous chef. She's a woman who, you know, is right up there right now. But my thing is just, it's still amazing that that's where we are. You
know? I know.
Like, there are more men providing the meals.
Still, Gordon Ramsay is, you know, everybody's.
And so to bring it back, will that mean? Oh, let me put it this way.
Okay.
So we're talking about the idea that this podcast is going to allow us to be able to have direct connections between shared experiences or experiences where people get informed, right, about what's going on the other side.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that we really want to talk about is, you know, in this era and in this time where there's a lot of self-reflection that should go on, especially for men,
right,
in terms of how they portray themselves or project themselves, or places where we've dominated, you know, whether right or wrong is not even the point. It's just there's so much domination in that area, and few women have the chance or the opportunity to be mentioned among the ranks. In those contexts, and we, you know, using this about, you know, chefs and all that, is there a role that we are supposed to play in our own respective businesses, industries, platforms to sort of level the playing field? Because there's no way to believe that there's not something unfair happening. You get what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
If women are traditionally the ones that say, oh, you're supposed to be in the kitchen. Oh, the woman is the one who cooks, you know, take care of the family, blah, blah, blah. And then you come to something that, come on, it's cooking. It's really being able to provide food. You know, this is something that you can, you know, you can draw the direct lines, and then it's male dominated. It's hard to not believe that there is something unfair happening somewhere, somehow, for that to skew.
It's so weird in that respect, because if let's say my 13-year-old is cooking in our kitchen, and it's something he likes to do, it's viewed as, oh wow, he's in touch with his feminine side.
Yeah, exactly, right? And he's criticized for it.
Yes. And until, you know, he turns 18, and then it's like, hey, this is a really cool path that he can take.
Mm.
You know, go into the culinary arts. And it's like, wait a minute, but 5 years ago, you were calling him, you know,
in touch with his feminine side.
Yeah, in touch with his feminine side. You said that he was, you know, not as manly, and which is a double standard. And some of the best cooks that I know are women.
Exactly.
My wife is an amazing cook.
My wife is the reason why I can sit here and talk to you, because I feel like I'm powered by her meals. And I tell her all the time, I'm like, I will not survive by myself. I know that already. And I'll be funding my entire retirement savings on restaurants.
Yeah.
But my thing is, in the midst of this expression, we now have this situation where it seems like an industry like this in this case, and there's so many of them. I'm talking about, you know, whether it's in the legal profession, even as doctors, even as, you know, I have a friend of mine who I think she was the only graduating African-American urologist, you know, in, mm-hmm. In her class. And I'm like, how is it that a field that has to do with, you know, like, my point is that we hope that through this podcast, we can be able to, you know, sort of share some of these stories. You know, like right now we're talking about, you know, chefs and the culinary arts and how it's male dominated. And, you know, if you had to give an advice to a lady who's like, you know what, I've cooked my whole life. I love to cook. This is something that I feel I can take to the world. But it seems like every time I look on the screen or I look at the TV or I hear in the news, there's some celebrity chef who's a guy, or there are chefs in restaurants that are men. What is she missing? Like, what would you say from your own limit, you know, your own experience, you would say, if you could think or talk or be or say or do or not do, as the case may be, would land you this game?
I would tell her not to give up and not to take any crap from men and give it back as hard as you get, because it's, you know what? The only thing that bullies respect is force. It's true. And most of these people are
they are bullies in that sense.
They're bullies, yeah. And they've got, you know, this much power. And you said before about, you know, this high pressure. It is the only job I know that is high pressure for no steaks. Or for medium rare steaks. It's so stupid. It's, you know, if I overcook something, it's, yes, I'm costing my boss the, you know, how much it cost us to get the meat in.
Yeah.
Which is incentive for me to not screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to get everything when you're watching, I need everything at the pass in 2 minutes. You know, do it. You know, it's like, why? This is stupid. If it, something goes out and it's not as it's, it doesn't burn the top of their mouths, the roof of their mouths, you have to wait for it to cool down enough for you to eat anyway, unless you're one of those idiots who eats soup that's boiling hot. And I've known people who do that.
Yeah, I know quite a few.
And I hate them, but
that's a different topic for a different day.
Of course. But if they're eating their soup and, you know, if you're a normal human being who has to, you know, blow on your soup, you know, when the steam's rising off of it, and you have to wait for it to cool down a little bit, it's not that big a deal. And this is not – it. No one is going to die if I don't get that.
But for some reason, that's the way they want to communicate.
That's the way
it – 2 minutes.
And we fall into those patterns. We're like, yes, chef. You know, yes, of course. And you do it.
So your advice is if you're a young lady, you're listening to the podcast – beyond trying to like hit you up on Twitter and be like, I don't believe you. The point is they should actually just take it and give it back as hard as it's given.
Absolutely. And if you're, you know what, you're going to be, if you're pumping out, say, let's go for a semi-realistic number. Let's say you're pumping out 125 meals a night. And that's a fairly good rate. You can handle anything that any guy yells at you. And if he's sexist, and seriously, if there's inappropriate touching or anything, stab him in his hand.
Well, or do fair point. There's a knife already in the kitchen. Yeah, you can pull it off.
Or do what I used to do, and that's accidentally burn people. Oh, sorry.
That kind of guy.
You know, oh, I'm sorry. Coming through, hot plate.
Boom.
You know, yeah, that's what happened. You know, some guy, there was a... And I'm not going to name names, and we're going back 25 years, so I can't be prosecuted for this anyway. This murder was not... Murder didn't happen, but...
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if it did, I wouldn't have... I'd been like, oh, who, me? guy used to walk the line. This was a guy who was, let's say, on par with me as far as, like, status goes, like, as far as being a cook. And he would walk the line. and he had no real business walking the line. So I would like heat up a sizzle pan.
Oh, wow.
A sizzle plate. Mm-hmm. You know what they bring the fajitas out on?
Yeah.
I would keep it there. And if he ever walked by me and didn't say behind you or whatever, I would spin with this thing in my hand and I would burn him through his clothes.
Oh, man. Wow.
And he didn't learn. I must have burned him like 22 times. And
man, not in one night.
Not in white. Not in like one night. But like, oh, dude, you didn't tell me you were behind me.
Oh, man. And he can't really say anything because according to the rules, he should have said something.
Of course. Yeah, that's exactly. It's professional courtesy.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Oh, my God.
So, ladies.
So you heard it here first. He owned up to the crime.
Yeah. Whatever your name again, is. Can't prosecute me for that.
Look at the scars on your body and you will.
Yeah, I'm probably going to. He's going to track me down and punch me in the mouth. But, hey, he deserved it. And he did. Deserved it.
I mean.
Jackass. That's what you say. You say behind.
First of all, you're telling him that you actually put scars on his body, and now you're calling him a jackass. Okay.
Oh my God, I have scars all over my body. I'm like one big scar from cooking professionally.
You know what? Now I'm worried about anyone trying to really be a chef because I'm like, if it's that dangerous at the back there and
God, everything's dangerous. Waking up in the morning is dangerous.
Yeah, but this one is self-inflicted injuries. Come on. You know, it's like you put yourself in that situation. Well, whichever the way, I just think that it is one of those things that we need to really sort of support more women to create more, spaces or places where...
Opportunities?
Well, opportunities is at somebody else's platform. Like, I mean, okay. Like creating platforms that sort of remove some of these elements, right? I mean, like you've said, if the soup is not burning the top of your mouth, you know, nobody's really going to hell or dying because of it. So why don't we have more places that would sort of make people more comfortable to come through with their talent? Because that's really what is being pursued, right? I mean, shouting, I need it 2 minutes now or you die, you know, might not be like the best way to get people motivated.
You know, it's, and that was one of the things I used to tell chefs who, you know, physically, I am unable to change physics. Mm. I don't have that ability. You know, this will cook. You want me to send out raw chicken? I can do that for you. But in real time, cooking a chicken, throwing it in the oven, I did, you called it out. You called the chicken. It's in there cooking. You needed 2 minutes. I need 4 minutes.
That's how long it has to take to cook. Yeah,
that's it. Takes as long as it takes.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he's like, I needed that 2 minutes ago. It's like, well, you know what? Then you should have looked ahead in the future and told me you needed a chicken 4 minutes before you needed it.
Well, that is a fair analogy of why we should have more sane places, mm-hmm. you know, where the people behind the scenes are more realistic. If it was going to take 4 minutes, why didn't he just shout, let me have it in 4 minutes?
Yeah.
Because he knows that's how long it's going to take. But what I'm saying is that some of what you're just describing is why maybe certain folks might say, you know what, this life isn't for me but if you look at it, it's unrealistic screams and shouts and bullying and sexism and all the other things that makes it difficult for somebody in his right senses to say, this is the world that I want to live in.
That's exactly why I said that you'll see these people are outlaws.
Wow.
They're gluttons for punishment. It's rampant alcoholism, rampant drug use.
Oh,
I am.
How do we have Wolf of Wall Street in the kitchen?
Where do you think they got the idea? And if you go back to like the profession of being a chef, mm-hmm. was essentially it came from the French Revolution when most of the people who were professional chefs were only professional chefs to queens and kings and dukes and the aristocracy. And in France, the restaurant came about because these guys didn't have any place to ply their trade. So they opened up restaurants so you could eat like a king for a day. You would do that. And – you know,
I thought it was just a case of, you know, if you're like me and you don't know how to cook in your house, you should go out and go eat. But
no, well, that's why the French were, you know, they had the cooking schools because after the French Revolution, all these guys who would cook for the king,
monarch, yeah.
They're like, we got to figure out a way to make a buck. Because vive la France and, you know, power to the people kind of sucks.
I did not have that context. Now I feel better about myself that I'm actually going there, not because I don't know how to cook and I'll poison myself, but because I need to eat like a king.
You should eat like a king.
I agree. You have made my day. Now I feel better. This podcast is also therapeutic. Okay. Very cool.
Isn't that nice?
Exactly.
That's another thing that's great about this.
Exactly. Figuring out things about everything. Well, okay. That is very, very cool. So let me ask you this.
Sure.
Do you know any Nigerians? Apart from me, of course, because now you know me. So, you know, that doesn't count.
No, I don't. I know you now.
Oh, for real?
Okay.
Let's make it larger. Do you know any African? Think hard.
I'm thinking
anything
hard.
You say next,
I know,
will be used against
of
you.
Of course,
Mike.
They will. Somebody's gonna like come up and slap me. He's like, "How dare you forget me?" No, you are my first.
Yes.
You're
wow.
My first.
Okay,
I know African Americans, but no, I know now.
Well, technically, it's the same thing, but
you know. No.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, it depends.
I mean, historically speaking, but. You are.
Yeah, and it depends on who actually has his papers. And,
right.
You know, if you have your papers, you're African American. If you don't, you're an immigrant, that kind of thing. But you know, that's a whole different conversation for another day. But in the grand scheme of things, nobody can own a position like the first person. You know, so I'm your first African lord.
Damn straight.
In the generic sense, of course, and not in the other sense. I hope you understand what I'm saying.
I do. I understand, and I'm excited.
Okay, awesome. So I'm your first true African. So let me ask you this very, very fundamental African question.
Sure.
If you had to travel to the continent of Africa,
right,
that has that many countries, even though people keep thinking that it's one place, what country would you like to visit?
That is such a great question. Now I got to go to Nigeria because...
Oh, I thought you were going to make a mistake, my friend.
No, I'm going to Nigeria.
That's the spirit. You heard it here first, folks. Mike is coming to Nigeria. I'm going to take you with you. They'll treat you like a king.
Excellent. I would love that.
Yes, you might not get your 85,000 back, but...
That's okay. I'll bring an extra 85 just in case.
My man, that's the way I like to roll. and you know, that's one of the things that we've been like trying to encourage people about, you know, like, come visit the continent, you know, come connect. Nigeria is a great place. Nobody parties like the party in Lagos.
Damn.
And Lagos is in Nigeria. It's right there is the nerve center, is the commercial capital in that sense. Not the main capital, but the commercial capital. So many businesses, parties, clubs, the whole nine. It's like, you know, it's like New York meets LA meets, you know, sections of Chicago.
How about New Orleans?
Is that right?
New Orleans? Have you been to New Orleans?
You know,
New Orleans?
That is one place I haven't been to.
You should go. Oh.
I hear it's fascinating.
The food is amazing.
You know, the videos, the dancing, the scene.
The history.
The history, the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
That's what we have to do. We have to have like a shared, shared universe.
No kidding, right? Yeah.
Just like
shared universe cruise. There you go.
Yeah, shared universe. You know, you go to Nigeria, come to Lagos, and then, you know, we'll pop out to...
we'll go out to
New Orleans.
Damn straight.
Wow. Okay. I thought it was New Orleans. Okay.
It is New Orleans, but they call it New Orleans.
Yep. Okay. You're not. But you know, that's what animals do, right? Gnawing on something.
Gnawing?
Yeah. Oh, that's gnawing.
Gnawing, yes.
The things I have to learn. Oh, my God.
You're well on your way, my friend.
Thank you very much. I think I put in a good job. You know, you can imagine what I go through in the bathroom every morning trying to pronounce all those words and speak to myself to make sure I don't make a mistake.
And also trying to remember to flush.
I like that. No pun intended. Don't forget to flush. Makes sense. Makes sense in all the world. And so that's one of the things we hope to do. So you are coming to Nigeria. We don't know when yet.
No, don't know when.
I'm your first African friend. And so I guess I shouldn't even bother asking you if you know any African music or if you've heard anything in that context.
Very little.
Well, you know about Wakanda, of course.
Who doesn't know about Wakanda?
Yeah, you know, it's like, right between Kenya and Morocco.
Right. And you are so lucky that I didn't meet Charlize Theron when I wanted to, because she would have been my first Afrikaner. So.
Okay, just FYI, you know it's not really a real place.
Wakanda?
Yes,
that I do. I was like, South Africa? Yeah, I know that is a place.
Okay, because I'm like,
no, I have the.
I was like, I'm trying to be sure that I didn't bring Mike into, and everybody's sending us emails and saying, oh, what's your email? Don't forget to flush at gmail.com. No. We're going to go ahead
there you go,
and let you know that Mike just said that Wakanda was a real place.
No, Mike did not say that, but he was saying South Africa is a real place because I have this Stop Apartheid banner still in my house. So I remember that. That's what I was talking about. We were, and I'm like, holy crap, was like that whole Lethal Weapon 2, that was not real? What the hell? Oh my God, this is blowing my mind.
Oh man. Yeah. And
Namo, you're killing me.
And FYI also, Kenya is very far away from Morocco. It's like New York to LA. So I was just pulling your strings across the board.
Good deal.
That kind of thing. Just awesome. FYI, because if we leave here and somebody be like, Mikey took advantage of your ignorance. You feel like you got that. So if we do get you out there and you get to experience the continent, one of the things that we hope that this podcast will continue to do is we have folks like you come on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, we brainwash you into believing that Africa is a really safe place to travel to with money hanging out of your pockets and your bags unlocked.
Like going to Detroit.
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
So we're going to be like, hey, everywhere is safe. The cops arrive 2 minutes after you call them. It doesn't happen here, but it happens in Africa. So, you should come out there. Don't mind me. I'm just kidding. But the point is, if we can get you to come out there and you can come to the podcast, similar thing, we want you to be able to have that kind of experience. But we also want you to be able to connect that experience to the people in the U.S., talk about your own experiences and how you've seen things and only the positive things. We have enough people talking about the bad things. Anyways.
Yeah. No, this is all about the positive. I mean, even peeking behind the scenes of restaurants is a positive thing because not to
peek behind the back of restaurants.
You know not to do that ever again.
That is not something I'm looking forward to doing. Right, now you've changed my mind now about eating at a restaurant because now I'm like thinking that somebody's holding somebody, burning somebody's skin off at the back and we're out here sitting pretty. And
as long as they're not serving it, you're fine.
How do you know?
They're not serving you human flesh. Don't worry about it. Unless you actually ask for it.
That reminds me of my first time when I went in asking for turkey. You know how you go in and you be like, I'd like to have some turkey on some, ciabatta or one of those other things that they and in my mind, I'd always eaten turkey, like the real turkey, where you actually see the leg and everything about it. And then the guy goes on this machine and it goes slice, slice.
Yep.
And I'm like, I know I asked for something that I could see. And then the guy goes, oh, that turkey? No, it's only a Thanksgiving.
Yeah, the roast turkey.
The roast turkey. I'm like, how did we get here? How am I sure that what this guy has just given me is not some horse meat?
It's not horse.
How do you know?
Because there is such a thing as the FDA does have to, make us the stamp stuff.
Where?
USDA Prime, where? They.
No, what I mean by where, I'm like, you're sure that in the middle of Queens, New York, somewhere, that somebody's living up to the hype and is not serving you horse meat at 2 a.m.
That's you take that chance.
Exactly.
You place your bets and you take your chance.
That's what I was saying. You never know in these restaurants. If somebody's flesh has been burnt off and the blood has been mixed into the soup and the soup gets cooked and then it's served to you.
Are you a cannibal? Sure. Why not?
Hey.
No, it's not going to happen. Because skin doesn't slough off like that unless it's really, really high heat. And to be honest with you, those 2 a.m. Forays into Brooklyn for food, it's an adventure. You just got to tell yourself that, no matter what happens, it's an adventure and it's a story. The one thing that we say here at a Shared Universe podcast studio is bad decisions make great podcasts.
Oh my God. That is such a good quote. I'm going to take that one. Bad decisions make a good podcast. So we will try on Don't Forget to Flush podcast to, talk about the great podcast that we get from bad experiences.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're going to go for. That is very, very cool. So one of the few things that I hope that you can be able to tell us today is, one, Mike, where can we see you?
Where can you see me? You can come visit us at Shared Universe Podcast Studios. That's ashareduniversepodcast.com. I'm all over social media. I tweet, I Instagram, and
you know, I've been curious about, do you do that yourself or you have somebody?
No, I do it myself.
So you're trumping this forward, like, you know, you really type it out yourself.
It's at Michael Zapcic, yes. MichaelZapcic.
People always say that people hire people for that.
I don't.
You are very popular, so it's possible that you've hired people.
No, I do that all myself. How about you? Where can we find you?
Well, I'm on Namo Worldwide, NAMO Worldwide. Also, my website is namoworldwide.com.
Okay.
And for the podcast, it will be at Don't Forget to Flush. The four is, you know, F-O-R, but it'll be the number four.
Don't, number four,
and then
get to flush.
It will be a number two. So it's going to be Don't Forget to Flush.
So 42 is, oh, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah,
cool.
You know, it's a throwback to you know what from you know where.
There you go. Gotcha. All right.
But Namo Worldwide everywhere else. And then on Facebook, it's Namoski. That's my page. On Namo, N-A-M-O, that's my page. But we're going to have the same thing too for Don't Forget to Flush. So you can catch our podcast there.
Very cool.
Yeah, man.
Well, I think this was a fantastic and inaugural podcast, and we're right at an hour. So,
wow, perfect!
Damn,
we killed it on the timing. Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you guys. And next time, we'll be introducing my co-host, Vanetta. Yes, please.
Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you later.
Oh shit.